Great to have you along for Garden Talk. You know, the University of Wisconsin-Madison Arboretum has an amazing history. The original planters, I don't think realized at the time, but they introduced a new concept in ecology, ecological restoration. It's the process of returning a piece of land to a previous, usually more natural condition. And up next, we're going to be talking about some of the native communities they created with our guest, Susan Carpenter, back with us. She's the native plant garden curator and gardener at the UW Arboretum, and she's going to be telling us about what you'll find when you visit. And I hope you do. Do you tour arboretums to get inspiration? Where are your favorites? What native plant is looking great in your garden right now? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Susan Carpenter with us by phone. Susan, thanks for joining in today.
Hey, great to be here, Larry.
What is, you know, I'm going to go right to a very basic thing because somebody asked me about this. What do you do as a native plant curator?
Well, curator is a term that refers to someone who, if you think of it in the museum context or in this case the botanical garden context, we're overseeing the collection of plants, or in my case, it's actually a grouping of gardens that represent native plant communities of southern Wisconsin. So we have prairie gardens of different types, savanna gardens, woodland gardens. We have some wetland areas that are rain gardens. So the curator, and I think the word gardener is helpful here too, because the curator and the gardener is the same person. And so my hands are a little dirty. My knees are a little dirty today, of course, because besides overseeing the garden, we're working side by side with volunteers. A couple of my volunteers this morning, when I mentioned I'd be talking with you today, said, "Oh no, he can't retire, but he deserves it." And then my students working with me during the summer. So we're all out there. We were doing some weeding. We're preparing a new garden bed area. Our garden designer created a new area, designed a new area, drew it out for on a landscaping plan. So we were setting up the boundaries of that and removing some sod and planting some plants. So it's just an exciting time to have kind of all aspects of gardening is what the curator here does with our gardens.
Well, and you've got, I'm looking at this map of your Wisconsin native plant garden, which is just absolutely great. How big is the native plant garden?
Well, the native plant garden here is about 4 acres, and we've got it pretty well filled. A very little of it is turf grass. So now we've planted out almost all of it into beds and also these, you know, under the trees. The trees have really grown up a lot from the time that they were planted about 24 years ago. And so it's we've got filled in under the understory, the different plants that would go with those particular trees. So it's really a nice demonstration garden for people to use to see how they could grow native plants at home. And also it serves as a bit of an introduction to our larger mission that you mentioned at the opening, which is to restore native plant communities and to maintain restorations, manage restorations of all the different types that will be suitable for southern Wisconsin and suitable for the land that we steward here, because we have 1,200 acres of arboretum here.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of areas to care for.
What site is looking best right now?
Oh my gosh, it's hard to say because everything's growing about 6 inches overnight, and more things coming into bloom. I think the one area that I'm really fond of at the moment is the Mesic Prairie Garden. So kind of medium moisture, soil moisture. It's kind of inspired by the tall grass prairie. So we have some of the taller plants there. The things that are blooming now that are just so pretty. The indigo is still blooming. Some of those are still blooming. The wild white indigo. The bee bee balm just started in that garden just today, and as today was the first day I saw a bloom open on that plant. The pale purple cone flowers have done really well this year. We've got the bright orange oxeye sunflower is blooming now. So there's just a lot of variety coming into bloom now. This July is really when the peak of blooming comes in that area. So it's just very, very pretty. Lots of variety, lots of diversity of plants. And then, of course, our insects are coming in. We've been able to document the rusty patch bumblebee pretty often, actually, this
that's
summer.
Cool.
So that's very neat, yeah.
So for the person who might be thinking about having one of these types of native plant gardens, how do you keep the sites healthy?
Well, what we usually encourage people to do is to make sure as they're considering what plants to plant or to expand in their gardens, consider what kind of a site it is, because if you can get a close match, I don't mean exact match, but a close match with the type of plant and the type of site. If you can match those two things, then you're going to be in luck. So, for example, lots of people have a big tree or multiple big trees in their yard, and they might have a kind of dappled shade, or they might have a very deep shade. So those are things to consider when you're selecting the plants that would grow under the trees or in those beds. And one neat thing to do with a big tree is to make basically a flower bed under its drip line so that you can grow woodland flowers there, and you can also protect the insects that are using that tree and then reproducing and providing all the food for the bluebird and the other insectivorous birds, or birds that are using insects for their nesting period. So just as an example. Also, if people have a garden and something is doing well there, they have a native plant that's doing super well on their site, I usually like to know what plant that is or what plants those are, because then I can suggest other plants to increase the diversity, increase the blooming throughout the season, increase maybe the animals or wildlife that would be attracted there.
All good points. Do you have problems with invasive much there?
Yes, we do have invasives. The good news in the garden is it's kind of a small area, and so the best thing to do is to kind of keep an eye on what's coming in. And in some cases, we don't have really weedy, we might not have a weedy species, but we might even have a native species that's kind of taking over a bigger share of the space than it, not sharing the space with the other plants. So we might even manage some of the native plants, take them, remove them so that it releases they may be shading other plants, or we may be able to add, remove some of that. We just did that this morning, removed a patch of plants that were kind of taking over an area, the Canada goldenrod, and then we planted another plant there that will be blooming later in the season, about the same time that the goldenrod will be blooming and about the same height. So we just are putting it in that suitable site and watered it in, and with the rains we've been getting, things are growing really fast.
Yeah, they surely are. And so you don't mind getting rid of even, quote, good plants?
Well, in the garden setting, we have a limited amount of space. I mean, and gardeners are usually pretty good at seeing that something might be, might be taking over a little too much space. So it's kind of it's a gardening approach, really. I mean, if I were on a larger site, if I were on a prairie restoration or a prairie area, a floodplain or something, I wouldn't use the same practices because there's plenty of space there and there's really, more room for all the plants. But in the garden setting, it's kind of, so for an example, I have volunteers who kind of complain about how much wild ginger they have, like they have too much wild ginger. And then I have volunteers in the same group who wish they had some wild ginger in their garden. So we need to get those people together without jumping worms and share their resources.
Dan in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dan.
Sure.
Hi. We have a small hobby farm, and we did a 10-acre prairie patch, very diverse. It's been about 4 years, so it's starting to show more blooms. And we have some sheep and some cattle that we occasionally will run through it, you know, to just do some grazing. Is there some species that you think that I should try to propagate that will, you know, help keep the prairie healthy? And then a second question, I know you're talking about invasive species. University of Wisconsin, I believe, was working on a herbicide with Corteva that targeted wild parsnip. Has that become commercially available, or do you know anything about it?
Okay, on the cattle question, I would say if you've got a good established, if your prairie is getting well established, doing light grazing is not going to be a problem. I mean, and by light, I mean you don't want them, like we do have prairie restorations where, I mean, I've heard of prairie restoration. We don't have them here at the Arboretum because we don't run cattle, but where grazing is part of the management. And so that is something to look into. You might look at a blog called The Prairie Ecologist online. Just look that up. And he regularly, he's from Nebraska, he regularly talks about their grazing and burn management and the types of the way the species respond and how the prairie responds over time with the different management they're doing with grazing and with burning. So as far as the Corteva project dealing with the parsnip, I have not heard. I did hear a presentation or at a conference, some presentation by some folks from Corteva, but they weren't specifically talking about that, dealing with the parsnip. I'll be all ears when that comes around because I know that the parsnip season is just underway, and I have some parsnip on conservation land that I deal with every year. But you really can, we are definitely, we've definitely made a lot of progress with that. You just can't ignore a year with it, I don't think. And reducing disturbance and having a lot of native plants in the area can be very helpful with keeping that more under control. We're seeing a lot on roadsides. We're seeing a lot fields where there is a lot of disturbance. But in areas on restorations where you've done control of it, you're going to more see it on like stream side and edges and roadsides in those situations. So don't be discouraged about it, but don't let it get away from you.
Dan, there you go.
I'll be waiting for Corteva's news to see whether that makes sense in our setting.
Susan Carpenter, native plant garden curator and gardener at the UW Arboretum. Our guest, questions for her about natives. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. You can email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at native plants today on the program with Susan Carpenter, native plant garden curator at the UW Arboretum. It's great to have her back to talk about what's going on there and to answer your native plant questions. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Mary in Milwaukee emailed to ask where she can buy true native plants. She's found some at the Weir Nature Center, but most plant centers sell cultivars.
A good question. I'm encouraged really by the number of nurseries that are now getting established and starting, and some of these can be rather small, but many of the, you know, we have the larger nurseries like Prairie Nursery, of course, long-term business, and Prairie Moon Nursery, another long-term business. And those are nurseries that are not selling cultivars. They're selling true natives. And then other nurseries in the area are more moving into this space. So Johnson's is moving into the space with selling natives. And I think And then all these new nurseries, like some just individuals who are starting nurseries and actually moving, because the demand is so good, moving very well into this. So I would advise to Mary, if she wants to get a list of these nurseries that are working with native plants and really a source for them, is to go to the Wisconsin DNR website and just put in the search bar native plants, and then a page will come up, and there is a link there to a directory of nurseries, including a lot of these newer nurseries that are available for native plants. And I think this movement is just going to continue and be very, very helpful, because the demand is really great for them. And I appreciate Mary's attention to cultivars, because sometimes a cultivar is modified enough that it really doesn't have the same biological characteristics that the wild type has.
Yeah, that's all very good advice. And I know Neil DeBole's operation. Mm. I'll tell you one thing. There is a lot of demand for it out there. I waited a bit too long. I needed to replace some native plants, and I waited a bit too long, and the ones I wanted were in very short supply. Let's put it that way. The natives.
Mm-hmm.
The true natives.
Yeah, and I think you can. Another neat thing is that if you join a group like Wild Ones in your area, a chapter like that, if you have your own native plants growing, you're going to get more seeds than you know what to do with. And then other people's same thing is happening. So there's a lot of opportunities for sharing and exchanging. And that is such a great way to spread the message of native plant gardening as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been doing work with bumblebee conservation for a long time, especially that rusty patch bumblebee you mentioned earlier. How are things going?
Well, there is some news about that recently. I mean, kind of broad news about it. We've been seeing the rusty patch bumblebee here, or monitoring it here at the Arboretum, for about 15 years now. And through that time, of course, it's been rare through that time, but it wasn't listed as endangered until 2017. Just this year, just recently, the Fish and Wildlife Service designated critical habitat for rusty patch bumblebee. So this is in the areas of its remaining counties in its remaining range. So that includes our area. And there's a lot of fine print in that designation. So I encourage people to go to the Fish and Wildlife Service. But it is an interesting step in thinking. I think what I take it as is a good example of how you can't just focus on an organism, but you do have to think about its habitat and the broader picture that, you know, the broader context that it lives in. And this is true for all organisms, but, you know, this endangered species has gotten a lot of attention, a lot of interest, and a lot of public, public support and public participation in monitoring and finding new locations and finding out nests and finding all kinds of information about this so that we can do a better job of conservation.
Barbara in La Crosse has a question. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, I'm so happy to get on, and happy retirement. I am putting in, for the last couple of years, clover to take over my lawn. I want it all clover. Mm-hmm. It's working quite well. I have found online lots of benefits to doing that, but I'm interested in what your guest would say.
About having white clover in your lawn?
Yeah.
It can be a very good, it's better than, as far as like pollinators are concerned, it can be a very helpful, can be a very helpful feature, much better than just lawn grass. And also, I know that if you're growing clover, if I see your lawn and I can see that you're growing clover in it, I know that you're not using herbicide in your lawn. So that means that that's going to be a healthier environment for the pollinators as well, and probably for pets, children, etc. But you can mow it, and it'll still, you can mow it periodically. At times when you probably still have grass in there too, when the grass is growing, not very fast, like later in the warmer part of the summer, then you can let it, and the clover is still growing and blooming, you can leave it for a little longer and not mow it, you know, quite as short, and then there'll be a lot more flowers available for them. We had an occasion here one time where that was exactly the case, and we had red clover, white clover. There was some heal-all, which is another plant in the lawn, and there were plantains and some other species of plants that were growing. And then I went out and documented there were 8 kinds of bumblebees and 6 kinds of butterflies and flies and honeybees and other insects using that lawn, and it wasn't a huge area. So it was kind of surprising that so much insect diversity was making use of it. So, I mean, I wouldn't, if you have a lawn and you just don't spray it, the white clover will usually show up. Sounds like Barbara's adding on to the white clover that might have showed up and probably has a pretty flower thing. Another important thing to do is just if you have areas of your lawn that you could convert to larger flowering plants, especially native plants, then you'll have the kind of the best of both worlds there. You'll have multiple sources for your pollinators.
Barbara, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Susan, I understand you have a question for me.
I do, Larry. Thanks for asking. I was curious about, can you think of what's an important gardening trend that you've seen throughout your amazing career hosting Garden Talk?
Oh, I can think of a couple of things. And since we're talking about natives, I think one of the, you know, 40 years ago, people thought you were weird if you were interested in native plantings in your home situation. I remember Neil DeBol saying that. He said people thought I was nuts when I 40 years ago when I started
the nursery. Uh-huh.
Started the nursery, and now natives are embraced, and I think that is maybe one of the biggest things that we've got going. And I think another is organic gardening methods. I think there's many more people are wanting to move away from synthetic pesticides. And I hear that every week on Garden Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a big thing. I mean, it used to be organic, and then it was all chemicals, sort of, and now we've swung back. And that's all in my lifetime here.
And that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, And I think the hardiness zone changes.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we're getting warmer longer,
yep,
is, gardeners are going to have to adjust to the longer growing season, maybe different plants. So
maybe different health issues to avoid.
Yeah. All of that. So, I mean, I think the biggest one for me is the native plants and embracing native plants.
I'm very glad to hear that.
I've really, really appreciate that myself, and frankly, I appreciate Susan your work over there. It's been a lot of fun working with you.
It's been just great, and I know the Arboretum here. We all join your listeners and all the gardeners across Wisconsin, Larry, to thank you for all that you've done for everyone's learning.
Well, it's been my pleasure, I can tell you that. And I'm going to miss all the programs. I'll certainly miss Garden Talk. And maybe I'll call in once in a while with a question.
I was just hoping you would say that.
Thank you so much, Susan. Appreciate your time and your friendship. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Susan Carpenter, the Native Plant Garden Curator and Gardener at the UW Arboretum. Boy, that was a lot of fun. And it's my last Garden Talk, my last official Garden Talk. And it's been really a great pleasure for me to be with you every Friday for all of these years just to talk about plants. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And it's been a pleasure working with our team, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. They're all part of the team. Of course, our executive producer and sort of overall boss, you might say, is Jill Nadeau, although we tend to work as a whole team here. And Jill leads it, but she leads it with a pretty light hand. Let's put it that way. Thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News. I'm Larry Mueller.